We're on a mission from God.
And now for something completely different. This is Pastor Jolly John Lekumsky coming to you from Northfield, Minnesota, one more time.
And this is Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark. I am in beautiful South St. Louis, as always, John, where I serve as pastor at Ascension Lutheran Church.
And this is, of course, Wrestling with the Basics. And, you know, one of our regular feature, Matt, in fact, we get all kinds of email. People say, oh, we just love this.
Flooded with email.
We shouldn't lie, should we? Not really.
This is
a Christian Bible radio show. Well, anyway, so whether people want it or not, we have a feature where we do 60 seconds of dumb jokes. But I thought today, in honor of the fact that this is KFUO's 100th anniversary. Can you imagine that?
100 years.
100 years. Despite shows like this, they still have been doing it for 100 years. I would like to do 100 seconds of dumb jokes.
Oh, boy. I'm sure KFUO, the executives there, are thrilled with this.
We need to let them know
their anniversary.
Because they're going to clip this. I'm sure they'll make a little clip of this. It'll be up on the website so that people can see the 100 seconds of dumb jokes in honor of KFUO's 100th anniversary. Are you ready? Have you got your timer set?
I can think of no better way, no more appropriate way, I should say, for Wrestling with the Basics to honor this historic anniversary, John.
That's right.
So
many
so
others
thank you.
But for Wrestling with the Basics, of course, this would be the perfect way to honor. All right. Well, enough talk.
Okay. I'm timing. You're telling the jokes. All right.
Give me a countdown, and I'll start.
All right. 3, 2, 1, go.
I worry about cured ham. What was wrong with it in the first place? When the chair was invented, the inventor's friend wanted to know what it did. The inventor replied, you might want to sit down for this.
That's a good one.
Okay. I used to have an open mind, but my brains kept falling out. Now, that's my life story right there. I had an open mind and my brains kept falling out. Oh, I just realized that I haven't done the hokey pokey in over 20 years, Matt. In over 20 years, I haven't done the hokey pokey. I guess when you get older, you just forget what it's all about. All right. Oh, I like this one. This is so true. My father worked 12 hours a day to put food on the table. Great dad, slow cook.
That's nice. You're halfway there, John. Keep going.
Halfway? Oh, man. My sister is blaming me for ruining her birthday. That's ridiculous. I didn't even know it was her birthday. The first five florists I called knew nothing about carpet or tile, and suddenly I'm the idiot?
Florist?
Okay. Florist, yeah.
Tile
and carpet.
Okay.
I was interrogated over the theft of a cheese toastie. Man, that really grilled me. Cheese toastie grilled. All right. Are we done?
Last one.
Okay. I stayed the night at the YMCA. I don't want to make a song and dance of it.
Well done, John. Oh boy. Man. Happy birthday, KFUO Radio. That was great. I like the chair one. That was good. That's a key.
You might want to sit down.
Yeah. This is a public service, too. It's a dual purpose of celebrating the anniversary. Plus, we're getting close to Halloween. And if kids are trick-or-treating, at least in some cities, they tell a little joke with that. So there you go.
They said they got a wide variety to choose from there. Yeah, well, maybe we'll have to do that the next time we record. We'll have special jokes just for the kids that are trick-or-treating.
We'll have to see
how that works out.
Okay.
So from the mundane which is probably more than that deserves even to be called mundane. I want to go to the sublime. I'd like to share with our listeners, Matt, my favorite Bible passage in the Gospel of Mark.
Oh, okay? Very nice, John. Great.
And one of the things that is I find really interesting about Mark is that, you know, he's the shortest gospel, and yet he has these things that nobody else has. And I'm trying to think, how did that, because he's supposed to be the first gospel. You think people would have picked up on this. And this is this story we want to share as an example of that, where he has this beautiful verse that and I've used this verse myself hundreds of times, and yet he alone tells us this story. It's a story about a dad whose boy is demon-possessed, okay? Now, Matthew and Luke have the story, but only Mark gives us the details about the dad. And it's the dad that I really identify with. And I know you as a father, you probably will kind of identify with this as well. If not as a father, certainly as a pastor.
Yeah.
But if you don't mind, let's just look through this. Matt, I know, did you preach on this story?
I did. Yes.
Okay. So
yeah,
just jump in with your insights.
Okay.
Because it is. It's a beautiful, beautiful story. And let's just read through it verse by verse. Although I would make this introductory comment. When we do the things in the lectionary, the problem is right now we're just going through the Gospel of Mark pretty much chapter by chapter for those of you who go to church every Sunday. But then there's this big gap. There's a big jump. We jump, I think, from chapter 7 all the way to chapter 9. And what we skip is the story of the Transfiguration. What is the story of the Transfiguration, Matt?
Yeah, so if you don't, I'm glad you brought this up, John, because if you don't know this, this really, the opening verses don't make a lot of sense.
No, they don't make any sense. Yeah.
To this whole reading. So yeah, the Transfiguration, we have Jesus goes up the mountain with Peter, James, and John, and there Jesus is transfigured before them, his clothes shining white. And along with them is Moses and Elijah. And then in addition to that, we also have that voice from heaven proclaiming, "This is my son, listen to him." So there's three disciples with Jesus on the mountain there, but that means there's nine left below the mountain, right? And so what we're about to read then is what's going on, what happens while the other nine are below, while Jesus and the three are up on the mountain.
So for our listeners who are reading through the Bible on their own, make note of that. Once you get through the Transfiguration, everything is in that context of Jesus going to Jerusalem to suffer and die. And so, like you say, you get all these geographical locations, but you'll notice, oh, we're getting closer and closer and closer to Jerusalem. Well, anyway, with that introductory thought, yeah, you want to read verses 14 and 15, maybe.
Sure.
Would be a good place to start.
And when they came down to the disciples, so that's Jesus and Peter, James, and John down from the mountain, they saw a great crowd around them and scribes arguing with them. And immediately all the crowd, when they saw him, were greatly amazed and ran up to him and greeted him.
So any comments you have about those opening verses, Matt?
So I just, you know, I just kind of tickles me because they come down from the mountain and it just seems to be chaos below, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's a great crowd gathered around there. The remaining disciples are there. The scribes are there arguing. You know, it's just kind of chaos. And so, you know, on the mountaintop, you see that, well, yeah, God is in control, right? And you hear the voice from heaven, but then you come down from the mountain and it's kind of proof that, you know, here in this world, Satan is alive and active and things are fallen and there's arguments and there's messes and there's demon possession. And it's just a reminder of, oh, no, things are not perfect here in this world.
And I agree with you completely. And that's why I identify with this, because, you know, sometimes we have a service and the sermon is just beautiful, and you can just feel the faith, you can feel the love in the congregation, and then you get home and all hell breaks loose, or whatever. You know, it's just, that's all right. So why don't you go ahead, because the next verses is where the father comes in, and he's the one I really want to talk about. Verses 16 through 18, if you would, Matt.
Yeah, and he asked them, this is Jesus, "What are you arguing about with them?" And someone from the crowd answered, "Teacher, I brought my son to you, for he has a spirit that makes him mute. And whenever it seizes him, it throws him down, and he foams and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. So I asked your disciples to cast it out, and they were not able.
All right. Any comments that you have about those verses, Matt?
Well, how embarrassing for the disciples, right, John? Yeah, you know? Here they are, and these Jewish scribes are watching them, and there's a great crowd even gathered around this man in his desperation, you know, brings his son, you know, his beloved son to him, who's demon-possessed and afflicted, and the disciples are unable to cast it out. And which is kind of shocking in a way, because you know, already in Mark's gospel, it's talking about how Jesus sent out the disciples, right? And it talks specifically about one of the things they did while they were sent out was cast out evil spirits, cast out demons. And yet here they are, and in this case, they're unable to. It seems like they fail pretty miserably. And this poor dad is left with a son who's still demon-possessed.
So that's what I was thinking, too. It has to be frustrating for the disciples because they know they can cast out demons. They've mm-hmm, done it before. Mm-hmm. I think the crowd, where the word is used, we'll talk about this in a moment, the word they use is amazed, because I think they're wondering too, well, we've seen these guys cast out demons. What's going on here? The argument, you can just hear the scribes kind of mocking them. Nah, 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 you're not as strong as you thought you were. And of course, the disciples say, no, it's okay. We got it under control. Maybe we just need to pray harder. If we pray harder, or maybe we all put our hands on the guy, we can cast out the demon. But of course, the guy I really identified with is the father, who's just saying, God help me, right? I thought you were going to cast the demon on my boys, and they were not able, he says. All right. Of course, at this point, Jesus' response is in verse 19 that we do need to talk about a little bit. Verse 19.
Yeah, verse 19, Jesus says, O faithless generation, how long am I to be with you? How long am I to bear with you? Bring him to me.
All right, I'm going to ask you the question because I did some study on this, Matt. I've got my own answer, of course, I've worked on. Who is the faithless generation that Jesus is talking about there? And by the way, let me tell you, there's at least four or five different answers from the commentators I read. So where would you come down?
Oh, well, I mean, first of all, you have the scribes already arguing. So I would say that the Jewish scribes, religious leaders who, you know, pretty consistently throughout Mark's gospel are faithless when it comes to believing that Jesus really is the Savior. But then also, I would say these eight or these nine disciples who just failed at casting out this demon. It doesn't tell us exactly why they weren't able to cast it out, perhaps, but we can kind of assume, you know, maybe they had such success earlier. They're getting a little too big for their britches, and they think they can handle this all on their own. And, you know, Jesus is on the mountain. That's okay. We don't need Jesus. We're going to do this ourselves. Jesus kind of alludes to the fact that they don't pray. Later he says, this kind can only be cast out by prayer. And, you know, perhaps the disciples neglected to pray, to look to God for this healing of this boy. And maybe they look to themselves. Certainly that would be faithless if that was the case. So yeah, I would say, you know, the scribes certainly, but also by extension, it seems like the disciples in this case too.
Yeah, and I agree with you completely. I would add the crowd. The one thing that I discovered this year is, like I said, Mark uses this strange word, they were amazed. They were amazed. And that's probably not a really good English translation, because the word actually means more about they're kind of alarmed, they're concerned. It's the same word that is used when Jesus goes in the Garden of Gethsemane and he's praying. And in there, it's translated, he's greatly distressed and troubled. It's the same word that's used for the women when they go to the tomb in Mark and find it empty. And again, we're told that they were alarmed is the English translation there. So I think there's doubt there too. In fact, they're probably thinking, well, is there a demon so powerful that maybe Jesus and his disciples can't handle? Of course, we could add the father, as we'll see in just a moment. He too is having trouble believing. Mm-hmm. And of course, when I preached this, I said, and you and me, we might as well throw ourselves in there too. Yeah, because this is a problem we all have as having faith. So we know who the faithless generation is. Here's what tickles me though. So the end of the verse, Jesus says, bring him to me. And we're all going, all right, it's settled, right? This Jesus will come in and he'll take care of everything. Good old Jesus, right? If nothing's else working, Jesus will come in. But no, that's what I love about this story. That isn't what happens. Well, go ahead and read verse 9:20.
And they brought the boy to him. And when the spirit saw him, immediately it convulsed the boy, and he fell on the ground and rolled about, foaming at the mouth.
So did it help to bring the boy to Jesus?
No, it hurt, if anything, right? Yeah, the demon seems to know who Jesus is, and this poor boy is being tormented all the more.
And so this is why I love this text, because I've been there, Matt. I've been there. I hope you haven't been there often, but I'm sure you're old enough that you've had it sometimes. But as a 71-year-old guy, there's been many times when I've had these problems and things, and all right, Jesus, come and solve it. And it just gets worse. It doesn't get better. It gets worse. And then this next verse, if I'm the father, I'm kind of getting a little bit frustrated at Jesus, because read what Jesus does here at verse 21 through 22, because I'm thinking, come on, Jesus, everyone knows what you need to do. You need to cast out the stupid demon. Come on. So look what Jesus does in verse 21 through 22.
And Jesus asked the father, how long has this been happening to him? And he said, from childhood. And it has often cast him in the fire and water to destroy him. But if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us.
So the thing I'm thinking, Jesus, what's this business about? Well, how long has this been going on? Really? What are you, a doctor now? You got to find out his medical history. What's the next question? You know, what kind of insurance coverage do you have? Come on. I think we all know the boy is demon possessed. Just get on with it, you know? I'm sure if you're the father, you're getting really, really frustrated. So did you deal with anything with this particular word here of Jesus and asking a question, how long is it? And the father's response, the devil wants to destroy him.
Well, how about you, Matt? What I really emphasized, John, was the father's words there in verse 22.
Yeah.
Because you know, it was kind of funny. The weekend before I preached on this, there was someone who was coming out of church and shaking my hand, leaving church, and says, Pastor, you know, why do bad things happen? You know, it's great question, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's you know, as people are just coming out of church, it's like, okay, I've got about, you know, 10 seconds to be able to give this person an answer. But it was, the reason they asked the question was, that week was 9/11 then, the observance of the anniversary of those terrorist attacks.
Wow.
And yeah, it's a sincere question, why do bad things like that happen? So that got me thinking, in a way, that's what's on this father's mind, right? You know, why is this happening to my son? Why is this bad thing happening? And when people try to ask that question, answer that question, you know, why do bad things happen? And especially, why does God allow it to happen? There's kind of two answers that people have had historically about why bad things happen and why God doesn't do anything about it, right? And, you know, what are those two things, John? It's either God isn't something or isn't something else. God is either not loving, right?
Yeah.
Or God is not powerful.
Powerful.
So it's either boy, God just isn't loving and he just doesn't care that there's bad things in this world. Or he's not powerful. Oh, he does love us, but he just doesn't have the power to do anything about the bad things in this world. So I think that's exactly the attitude we see in this father's response. You see this suffering of his son, this bad thing happening. Why is God allowing this to happen? Why would Jesus allow this to happen? Things are going worse as I bring my son to him. And he asks the question, or he says to him, to Jesus, if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us. So it's kind of, okay, if you can do anything. So one, if you're powerful enough, Jesus, do something, but then two, have compassion and help us. Do you care about us? So I think it's really that same question is in that father's head as so many people have today when it comes to suffering. Is Jesus, one, powerful enough to help? And then two, does Jesus love me enough and my son enough to help, right? Is Jesus powerful enough? Is Jesus loving enough? And I think that that's really reflected in those father's words.
Yep, and I agree with you. And you have to be encouraged by the fact that the father did choose the word compassion. mm-hmm. or at least as those of us who are reading through the Gospel of Mark, we would find that word comforting, because that has been established earlier. Mark has used that word. We know that when Jesus sees people that are helpless, right? Sheep without a shepherd.
Yeah.
Mark says he has compassion. It just is the automatic response. But now you've got the other thing, but can you do anything about it, Jesus?
Yep.
Which, exactly. Of course, is what Jesus picks up in his response. But again, I'm thinking, Jesus, I don't know that. Well, I'll give you my opinion about this. Why don't you read Jesus' response in verse 6?
Sure. Jesus says to him, if you can, all things are possible for one who believes.
Now, let me share with you just a couple of comments, going back to the story of the Syrophoenician woman. Because in that story, as you pointed out, Matt, Jesus implies that she doesn't really deserve his help. So I guess we could ask that as a third question. Maybe it is that Jesus has compassion. Maybe it is that Jesus has power. But frankly, you just don't deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
mm-hmm.
the problem. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And that's the impression he gives that woman, right? It's not right to give the children's bread to the dogs, he says.
Yeah.
Now here's what I said to the people that I preached this to, and I'm going to say it to everyone who's listening to us right now. Don't you dare do that. Okay? Don't you dare come up to someone who's suffering and suggest that Jesus isn't helping you because you don't deserve it. Don't dare do that. Unless, of course, you have the power to turn around and answer their prayers and heal, in this case, the daughter that was demon-possessed. If you have the power to do that, and if that is your intent to do that, well, then, okay, you can point out to someone that they don't deserve that whatever you're doing is going to be an act of mercy. I understand that. We need to know that it's always an act of mercy. But if you can't do that, then you better just keep your mouth shut. Don't ever tell anyone they don't deserve the help of God, and that's why they're suffering. And I think it's the same thing here, too. Don't you dare say to someone, oh, you don't have enough faith. That's why you've got the problem you've got. If you only have enough faith, oh, then Jesus will come in and he'll answer your prayers and he'll heal your demon-possessed son. Don't you dare say that. And again, unless you have the power to answer that man's prayer, to cast out the demon, and that is your intent all along to do that. I think that's what's important for us to understand in both of these stories. Jesus knows from the beginning what he's going to do, okay? It's not dependent upon anybody. In the end, he knows that those demons are going to be cast out. He would do nothing different than that. But in both cases, these people, there's other things they need to know. So the woman does need to understand she really doesn't deserve it. But then again, God doesn't do stuff to people because they deserve it. He does stuff because he has compassion on them. And by God, he does have the power. Mm-hmm. And likewise, he doesn't heal people because they have a stronger, a better, a greater faith. Can I share with you a quote from the Lutheran Confessions of all things?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, by all means then, John.
Worthiness does not depend on the greatness or smallness, the weakness or strength of faith. Instead, it depends on Christ's merit, which the distressed father of little faith enjoyed as well as Abraham, Paul, and others who have a joyful and a strong faith. Okay? So I think the point simply here is that Jesus says, I'm going to take care of your son. I know you don't know that, but it's a fact. You don't need to worry about that. You were right when you called me a God of compassion. And to answer your other question, I have the power. There's no doubt about that. But you need to know you need something more than just the son to be healed. You need to have faith. And that's what I'm going to give to you. Now, here's the conclusion here, Matt. Because at this point, if I were writing the story, that'd be the end. Right? Jesus would cast out the demon. Everything would be fine and hunky-dory, just like it was with the Syrophoenician woman, and we could all go home happy. But here's how the story ends, and it doesn't end that way. If you could read just verses 25 and 26.
Sure. And when Jesus saw that a crowd came running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, "You mute and deaf spirit, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." And crying out and convulsing him terribly, it came out. And the boy was like a corpse, so that most of them said, he is dead.
So what struck me is, again, it didn't get better. It got worse. Right? Jesus cast out the demon. And don't you love the little thing about never in or again? Kind of a reflection on the fact that, yeah, demons go away, but then they love to come back and bring their buddies. You know, that ain't going to happen here. Mm-hmm. But the kids, for all practical purposes, he's dead. And if you're the father, you're thinking, oh my God, I said at the beginning, I just wanted my son to be healed. And now it looks like the demon won, because that's what the demon wanted to do all along. He tried to destroy him in the water and the fire. Why the demon couldn't destroy him up to now, I have no idea. I guess somebody was helping my son, but now the demon did destroy him. He's dead. See? And I just, that's why I identify with this text for two reasons. One, because that's been the story of my life. I've seen situations where I prayed to Jesus. I know God is powerful. I know he's compassionate. And yet things didn't get better. In fact, people I love died. Right? And I really love this text because in those situations, I've had to pray, Lord, I believe. But man, help thou my unbelief. Because that unbelief is still there. That has not gone away. So did you have any comments? Because then we come to the really fantastic conclusion of this story. But do you have any comments about any of this at this point?
No, I mean, that's great, John. And I think just when what we're, our eyes perceive our problems in this world, you know, I think that's a faithful prayer to cry out. Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. You know, your promises, I know them, Lord. I know your promises so well to be with me and love me and all those wonderful things. But boy, right now, what I see with my eyes contradicts that. Remind me that your promises are bigger than my problems. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good prayer to pray.
Yeah, I love that. That is a beautiful thing. The remember the promises are bigger than whatever the problems, and the promises always come true. Well, read the final verse here, verse 27. Well, actually, it's not the final verse. We have a little epilogue, but the father's story ends here at verse 27.
But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he arose.
So here's the problem. If you're going to go to Jesus and say, Lord, I believe, help thou my unbelief, you better watch out, because he's probably going to give you more faith than you wanted. Right? In my circumstances and in the Father's, I just want him to solve my problem. That's all I'm looking for. That's all the faith I need. And yet the Lord's going to come and say, oh, well, you think that's all the faith you need, but I'm going to give you an even greater faith. I'm going to teach you that I not only can cast out demons, but I can actually take dead people and bring them back to life, which ultimately is probably the promise, as you alluded to, that is most important, because we're all going to die. I cannot avoid that. But I can't even overcome that. That's the great thing about Jesus. There is literally nothing in this world that he can't overcome. And so that's the faith we need. Now, I think, if you don't mind, Matt, let's start our next episode with these concluding verses 28 through 29.
Sure.
Because I do believe they have a really important thing to say to us about our problems. And I understand we're going to get away from Mark. You have a special topic you want to talk about next week. And what's that, Matt?
You bet. So we recently celebrated the Feast of St. Michael and All Angels. And so let's talk a little bit about angels, John. When we talk about angels, there's a lot of different things we could talk about. But there's one thing in particular I'd like to focus on that maybe we don't always think about when it comes to angels.
Oh, now you got me excited. All right. So next week, one thing we don't usually talk about, angels, this has been Wrestling with the Basics.
Showing support for KFUO is now easier than ever. You can sport a KFUO shirt, swag, or even socks by visiting our online store. Go to KFUO.org/store and order high-quality KFUO-branded merch. You no longer need to wait for our annual share-a-thon for a chance to show your KFUO spirit. Visually share and wear this ministry out in the world by checking out our selection. Every purchase helps to support our proclamation of Christ for you, anytime, anywhere. Go to KFUO.org/store.